Okay. Okay. So we're gonna focus, and then I'll tell you what we're doing. We're gonna have it's gonna be a fun class. We're gonna do more brain. What's the teenage brain? So that's a lot of what we're gonna do today. So to focus, let's close your eyes, sit up straight. And allow the sound to bring you into the present. Follow the sound. Raise your hand when you can't hear it anymore. Center a little bit more. Get a little bit more calm. And let's follow the sound again. And one last time. So let's start with 10 minutes of meditation. And then we're going to talk about what the stresses are, why it's so frustrating to be a teenager, and we're going to talk more about the brain and particularities of how the brain develops. And what happens to the brain between when you're 15 and 30, which is partly why it can feel very frustrating to be a teenager. Now, what I want to do with the mindfulness is I want to shift that from feeling victimized by your hormones, your brain development, your intellectual capacity exceeding your emotional development, and all kinds of other things, to it becoming a real period of observation. So the fact that there are a lot of conflicting and sort of unstable elements of your physiology at this particular stage of life can become a real interesting phenomena that you start to observe. So you start to become a scientist regarding your own growth and development. And ultimately, this is really where we learn, is we learn from observing our own experience, understanding our own experience, and having some sense of not control, because we can't, you know, when we're growing, we actually can't control that, but we can control how we relate to that process. So what I want to do is I want to create some real space and some interest on the whole phenomena of going through this growth period of the time when you're 15 to 30 in terms of brain development. So first we'll sit and really take, because we have just 3 weeks, really take advantage of the meditation periods that we have. And so let yourself sink into yourself. experience a surface level of movement, awakeness, stimulation, excitement, agitation, the normalness of being in the middle of a day. And experience also that there is a centeredness or a core of yourself that you can access and turn your attention away from the surface commotion to this inner space. You can follow the inhalation and the exhalation. As you turn your attention inward, let your body settle down and become still. Feel the familiarity of following the breath. And a sense of expansion inside. Experience a sense of rootedness and ease. In this space of meditative awareness, self-consciousness falls away. And self-concern falls away. If you find it hard to focus, just open your eyes and put your attention on the floor in front of you and follow the breath. Allow yourself to let go. Of the storylines going on, the conversations you're in the middle of. Just let everything go for the next minute. When you hear the sound of the bell, let the sound bring you out of meditation. Did it feel like a relief to meditate after 2 weeks' break? So it's become more familiar, which is really interesting. When you don't meditate, you feel like, how could I possibly focus again? You sit down and you meditate, and it doesn't take long to just slip in. So we've begun to create some space for that. You can come here. Yeah. I know it's a little tight. Here, you want to stick your books over there? Yeah. Okay. All right. So the theme of today is we're going to learn how the relationship between the brain and the brain development and what's happening in our ability to focus and our ability to pay attention, and how the practice of meditation can put you in a position where you're interested in the chaos of your internal experience rather than afraid of it or just trying to control it. So this is an interesting thing, and a lot of the brain research, they're changing their minds about stages and ages and different parts of the brain. Generally, what's happening is they're realizing that there's more and more plasticity and there's more and more room for development. So, but in the meditation, how many of you were not able to focus at all? And what was distracting you?
Me.
Yeah.
My thoughts.
Your thoughts. Are we excited, nervous?
Just thinking.
Just thinking. Was it chaotic, confusing, or just things
on your
mind? Just the usual. Good, bad, on a scale of
bittersweet.
Okay, what about you? You're just restless and distracted. And you can't sit still. Right. So, and what else? What did you have? Tired? Were you tired? One of the things that they say, in because the brain is developing so much between the ages of, some say between the ages of 15 and 22, more and more they're saying between the ages of 15 and 30, they actually say that in your later teenage years you need, believe it or not, 9 to 10 hours of sleep a night. Now, how many of you get between 5 and 6?
7 to 8.
7 to 8. 7 to 8 is really good. One of the things that happens with the brain one of the things that happens during these years is that there's something called your circadian rhythm, which is, it's like a gland. They don't know exactly what it is about right here, and it regulates your sense of time. And that's why, like, sometimes people get jet lag and they can't get over it and their sleep system's completely messed up. That's because their circadian rhythms get out of balance, and there are new techniques to help get it back in balance. But during your teenage years, there's a certain hormonal secretion that happens that readjusts your rhythms. So it's harder to wake up in the morning and you want to stay up later. And if you, can you feel that?
But you also wake up early on my weekends, because I wake up early.
You do? Really?
The school.
Interesting. That's interesting. Sleep all weekend, yeah. You wake up at 6:37. That's interesting. Right. So you, well, that's interesting. And it's interesting that you, it's, is it hard to wake up during the week?
Yeah. Depends. No, I wake up like at 6:30, like around
the, every day. And you just get up. That's interesting.
It's like I have a schedule. But there, like, I think it was like 2 weeks ago, I just kept going to bed at 6 o'clock. I don't know why. And now I woke up at like 4, and I just like to get shower and just think, like, I'm already up now.
You're already up.
You might as well.
Yeah.
Just sit down until the time is ready.
Yeah. So interesting. I mean, there's a range of experience. But if you do start experiencing that it's easier to stay up late and harder to pay attention in the morning, it's not just you. It has to do with this readjustment of your sense of time. Now, what are the other things that happen, like, during these years that are confusing? Yeah.
You go through changes, such as coming into high school.
Yeah.
To focus on what you're doing in your future.
Yep. Exactly. Which is easy and hard.
It's not easy.
What's hard about it?
Everything.
Like?
Certain factors impose certain obstacles on you, not even inside of school, but like outside of school as well. And when you're inside of school, you have to focus on making sure you get straight A's, making sure you get to school on time, or making sure you have enough stuff to put on your resume.
Yeah.
Worrying about what college you're going to, how you want to afford it. And then the factors of being a teenager also imply into it as well, from like peer factors or factors of trying to develop yourself as a teenager.
Mm-hmm. That's really good. Definitely. What else? Yeah.
I didn't realize until this year that how much external factors could destroy your one-track mind.
Uh-huh.
And the external factors are like so unique to the individual person. And when I say external factors, most people would think, oh, my mother wants me to clean my room, and that's distracting me from doing my homework. When it could be something like, I like these pairs of shoes, and I also like these pairs of shoes. Where does that fit in on my individual personality? And so trying to deal with all of that stuff and prioritize what's important, I feel like that's the most hardest part of growing up.
Right. And what's interesting is everyone talks about peer pressure, and peer pressure is also part of brain development, because what happens in this age period of brain development is that your limbic system, which experiences, feelings, and excitement starts. It starts to develop, and there's a growth spurt. There's a growth spurt that happens like between the ages of 0 and 2 in the limbic system, and there's another one that happens when you're 15 to 17. Now, when that's going on, you're experiencing a lot more emotionality. You experience input, sensory input, but what you don't have is you don't have the development of the prefrontal cortex, which continues to grow and develop, which we talked about before. You know, these are the reptilian responses. Here's the limbic system, which is very close to our reptilian responses. Then the prefrontal cortex is what helps us regulate our reactions. This isn't that developed yet. So when we feel emotions strongly, we don't have the development to know how to respond. So peer pressure kind of comes at us in a way that we can't really control. So, you know, you can ask, you know, and I'm sure you've experienced, somebody will say, you know, don't drive with somebody who's had something to drink. You know, you're not going to do that. And then all of a sudden you're in a situation and there are 20 people there and you're leaving a party and you think, oh, it's not going to matter, and I'll just take a risk. That's because this is not so developed. So you're getting the stimulation. It says, that's fine, go with it, it's exciting, and everything's going to be fine. Your kind of ability to see into the future and to control that is less developed. Now, what they say is that what develops this is also it's the gray matter of our brain and also the synapses. And during the period of 15 to 22, there's an explosion in the gray matter and the synapses. And as you grow later on in life, they get kind of cleared out and the pathways get developed. Yes. Did you have a question? What? Gray matter is, I forget it's the part, it's like the substance of the brain. What's that? Really?
Frank Ocean. You know who that is?
No, Phil, look him up.
Okay.
Is it a good song?
Yeah, it's called Pink Man. It's not called. He talks about the brain, though. Paris, and you'll hear me.
Okay, cool.
What's the pink matter?
I can't.
So it's not about the brain.
It might be. Well, it's interesting. There are a couple of songwriters who have incorporated a lot of brain understanding into their lyrics. It's fascinating. What's it called? I forget. There's a technical term for it, which I probably didn't write down on my notes. But it's the sort of substance of the brain. The synapses are the pathways that connect, and as those synapses get smoothed out, you're able to think and plan more clearly. So what happens when that's not so developed are the stimulation for risk, excitement, is something that we have less control over. So what you want to start doing is you want to start observing this in your own experience. You want to start observing yourself doing things that you kind of know better, and then you find yourself doing things that sort of surprise you, or getting angry at your mother. And you probably like your mother. I mean, she's probably not perfect, but maybe you like your mother, and you probably do. And you find yourself getting angry. This is what's that? What was that? Oh, yeah. So, and that's also a parent's worst fear, is that when their kids become teenagers, all of a sudden their kids hate them. Now, what that is also, it's less control over all those responses. So, more prone to anger, more prone to outbursts of emotion. And it's not just brain development. Of course, it's hormonal changes, which have to do with bonding, sexuality, relationship. All of that starts to get activated. So all of that's getting activated here, and there's not that much development here. Now, it's not a problem. It's not the other thing about the difference in development is that our intellectual development exceeds emotional development. So you have really smart people who are very emotionally immature, and then, as you know, 10 years later, it all kind of catches up. So just because you're very smart doesn't necessarily mean you have that control over your emotional responses, and that can be very confusing and frustrating, because you can see it, you can understand it, and you still don't do the right thing, or you still get angry when you know you really shouldn't, or you still misinterpret something when you know you really shouldn't. You can see it all happening, but you don't have the capacity to regulate your emotional response. So this is what we can do with this. We can't really change that. It just is what it is. But what can change is your relationship to it. So if you get really angry at your mother, and you know you're not really justified, it's not really fair, but you can't really control it. You know, you can try to make yourself feel that you're justified, but you know you're not really justified. Then you can start to look at that through the practice of meditation. You start to get space on your experience. You start to see all these thoughts going through your head. You don't have control over those thoughts, but you see them. You go, oh, that's really interesting. That is really interesting. I can't do anything about it. This is how I'm responding. This is how I'm interpreting the situation. But I might not be right. Because my emotionality is so strong, and my ability to understand my emotionality is not so strong, maybe I misinterpreted what she said. Maybe when she looked the way she did, she wasn't even thinking about what I thought she was thinking about. Just because I'm responding strongly doesn't mean I'm right. And having that space gives us a sense of interest and a sense of humor around all the tensions, a sense that we're developing inner strength, not because we can control those things, but because we can understand what's happening. And this is something that it's... it can be really confusing, and it can be really frightening to feel out of control. After the car accident that I was in, I had a really bad concussion, and I was very, very meticulous, and I was a teacher for an international organization, plus a personal assistant to the founder, who was really precise about everything. And I was really good. If something happened, you know, like if he was flying in from overseas, I knew that if this was going to happen, I had to do 10 things. I had to get somebody to pick him up. I had to prepare, you know, all of the messages for him. I had to prepare the briefs for what he needed to approve and go over. And there was a whole chain that set into motion. After the car accident, I lost the connections to set all those things in motion. Because of the impact, it literally disrupted those synapses. So it broke them. And it created scar tissue between them, so there were barriers to that process happening. And I didn't know it. And I was in the kitchen one day, and the founder was flying in, and I knew that. But I had not set the 12 things in motion that I knew in my sleep to do. And when I realized that, it completely freaked me out, because I had lost my ability to order and respond and function. And it was really confusing, because I thought, who am I? What happened? Because I am the person who, if this happens, knows to do all those other things. And I didn't know it anymore. So that's the kind of thing that, and then it doesn't really come back in that way. So I had to train and do all kinds of systems. I had to create like pieces of paper that represented different things. So if this happened, I had to put things physically in place to do what I could do like that. And at first it was really unnerving, because you think, oh my God, what happened to my brain? What happened to my capacities? What happened to what I used to know? Who am I, really? And then I started to just become really interested in the fact that we can have some kind of anomaly, and whether it's teenage growth hormones or it's loss of functioning, we can look at that and work with it in a way that's not limiting. And I think that that's going to be the best way to understand these times, and also to kind of create a sense that you're not just waiting until you're over this period. You're not just waiting until your cognitive abilities and your process abilities have caught up with your hormones. You're just in the middle of it. You're engaging with life. And the more you engage with life as it is now in all the confusion, it will serve you in the future, but it's also just going to be incredibly fun. And it's going to take away a lot of the horrible angst and self-consciousness and arguments with your mom that inevitably happen at this time. Interesting, right? It's fascinating. So why meditation works is because it just gives us the space. It gives us the space to see these things. It gives us the space to see how much peer pressure there is, and not to feel like there's something wrong with us, or, you know, and not to feel like we're weak or inadequate or we don't know ourselves. Everything's in a process of flux. And also then you can start to see that there are differences between us, but everyone is more or less experiencing the same thing. And so especially the misunderstandings, the misinterpretations, you can be a little bit looser about it, a little bit lighter. You don't have to have the same kind of wars, either against yourself or against someone who was your best friend. Questions. we're going to meditate again. Yeah. Did you have a question?
Oh, no.
What do you think? Does it make sense? Does it help a little bit? A little bit? What was it? What's that?
I was talking to myself.
Oh, you're okay. Yeah.
I'm a bit of a control
freak. Yeah.
So, when it comes down to this idea of me not being able to control my reactions,
yeah,
to all of the external and internal factors that are affecting me as a human being, I don't like that concept. So, is there any way that I could use meditation or some other form of essentially therapy in order to be able to control my responses to certain things and not so much get stressed out or upset or have those negative feelings towards things that are going on? Or is it just something I have to accept?
Because you get, what is it? You get angry,
yeah,
when you can't...
Like when certain stuff doesn't go the way I want it to go, or if something is distracting me from doing something that I need to do and I prioritize it as first, I try to deal with it. But when things don't go as predicted, I get upset or frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That's what slows me down.
Right. So that's common. I used to be like that. I mean, certain things would, you know, that were seemed really small. There are two ways to approach it. And one way is, first of all, to see that as part of this period of development. That the emotional reactions are excessive. They're out of proportion to what's happening. And that's, again, because this part of the brain, which is very close to our most primitive part of the brain, is developing. It's going through a growth spurt. So it's feeling more, it's reacting more. And also in men, testosterone increases by almost tenfold in the ages 15 to 17 or 12 to 17, depending. So all of that's happening here. This is later, it develops later. So you in a way aren't going to have, you're sensitive and you're exploding here, you're not going to be able to have that much control over your reactions. But what you can have control over is to not identify you as your reactions. So this intense, angry, control, frustrated, sense of disdain and superiority and, you know, incredulous criticism arises. Does that sound familiar? Yeah. It's all right. But you don't have to be that person. So all of that can arise and you don't have to be it. You recognize, oh, okay, this is kind of my personality traits at this point. Doesn't mean you're going to be like that when you're 30. People change. They actually do change. I know a lot of science and a lot of psychology says you don't. I've seen people change. So people really do change. So you just say, wow, okay. But I don't have to be controlled by that. It doesn't mean I'm not going to experience it. But it's not a kind of fatalistic, oh, I'm just stuck with this. You just become interested and you just be a little soft around it. You know, just be a little soft around the fact that you, because if you start feeling all those things and then you don't want to be that way, then you clench down and then you're more that way and then it all creates this tension. But you just develop a little space and you just go, okay, well, this is really interesting. A lot of factors are in play and that's okay. And it doesn't mean you're a bad person, and it doesn't mean you're failing at your inner development or your spiritual development, or, you know, it doesn't mean you're going to fail at your aspirations. And the more you can just be easy around it and not identify yourself with your responses. Because you start to see some of it's mechanical, some of it's age, some of it's environment, some of it's objective pressures, but you have, you know, as we experience meditation, you have this space that's different than that. And but the trick is going to be, it's a proactive easiness. It's not a victimized easiness, because that won't work, you know, and especially if you're kind of type A personality, it's not going to work. because type A personalities want to succeed. They don't want to be victims. So this is going to be a more subtle level of success, and it's going to be a subtle shift. And meditation can definitely help with that. Cool. What else? Should we meditate again? It's hot in here, huh? I don't know if I really covered everything I meant to, but that's all right. So, do we want to do a breath meditation, open meditation, silent meditation, or body scan?
Silent.
Great. Okay. Go ahead. Okay. So use the bell to take you into meditation. And in this meditation, on one hand, really let go of everything that I just said. Whatever's important is going to be there. It's going to work in you. But also really apply your focus to being present and then see what happens. So try to really be more alert. That was a soft one. Keep your attention on the breath and the stillness. You can notice the sound in the room. Let the sound be part of the meditation. I guess so. That came fast.
And we're going to set up the library the way that it's we need it to be on Monday for our class. So let's go ahead and do that before you go anywhere. I'll announce your late arrival if I need to. One table needs to be moved over there.